Today's reading is Hebrews 10, 23 to 25, and there will be two different readings. The first will be from the NIV. Let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who has promised is faithful. And let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. And from the Message, it reads, "So let's do it. Full of belief, confident that we're presentable inside and out. Let's keep a firm grip on the promises that keep us going. He always keeps his word. Let's see how inventive we can be in encouraging love and helping out, not avoiding worshiping together as some do, but spurring each other on."
Even in the prayer and praise time, we're hearing so much about journeys, aren't we? Travel, travel, travel. It's part of our lives these days. There's no question about that. Many of us do it. John and Kara just got back from the East. Dwight and Patty, Bob and Janine are in Hawaii as we speak. Mark and Megan and the kids are in Ohio. So travel has become so normal for us. But it takes planning. Poor Henry. Poor Henry. Where were you? We waited and waited, but finally decided that. I'm not sure if that was poor planning on Henry's part or a poor execution of the plan. However, since traveling is so ubiquitous, we all do it. An extremely important part of traveling is packing for the journey. Do you find that easy or do you find that difficult? We have a dear friend whose career was commercial piloting, and his normal flight was New York to Cairo. And I have just loved watching him pack. It is so straightforward. He has done it hundreds and hundreds of times. Doesn't forget anything. Very efficient. Takes nothing that's not necessary, but everything that's essential. I could tell you a contrasting story about when we moved to Scotland in 1979. We had a 3-hour wait at SeaTac before our transatlantic flight, and we used every single minute of that 3 hours to repack our footlockers, our suitcases, and our cardboard boxes tied with rope. We utilized the floor of SeaTac International Airport as our staging platform. But that's too embarrassing. I'm not going to tell you about that. Packing is important. Very important. And you need to take the right things. I have a Jewish Quaker friend who lives in Lancaster, England, and one day he wrote to us, "It's the journey itself which is of value. So travel light, else the journey becomes uncomfortable." You need to take the right things. Well, you know that here at Reedwood, we have been following Abraham's journey. Can you imagine his packing? Genesis says that he had become extremely wealthy in Egypt, in livestock, in silver, and in gold. Can you imagine his packing? servants, tents, family, livestock. No wonder they went by foot instead of catching a plane. Now, I want to expand the idea of journey beyond the Old Testament, Abraham, Sarah, Hagar. Reedwood has been on a journey. Reedwood is on a journey. Each of us is on a journey of growing up, a journey of growing older. I didn't say growing old, growing older, and a journey through life, a spiritual journey. And so today I want us to think about one of the most important things to take on that journey, something we definitely need on the journey. I'm going to tell you several stories to hint at the main thing we must take. So I'll tell you the stories. You look for the hint. Then after that, we'll explore it from Paul and the life of Jesus. So let's go. In the spring of 1976, we were pastoring in Oklahoma City. We'd been there 7 years, first as youth pastor and then as senior pastor, working with kids, their parents, plus the whole range, age range through senior citizens. We were very, very close to these dear folk, close enough that we are still in touch with them these 43 years later. In fact, we've been back there twice in the last 2 years to do memorial services for some of them. It was not only a place of ministry, it was where our two children were born. It was home for us. And then an exciting opportunity opened up. The invitation to move from Oklahoma City to Portland to begin teaching college. It was the right choice, but it was a difficult decision. Even as we made that decision, we grieved the loss of that community, those very dear people. And one of my board members, a cardiologist, a very sensitive and caring man, knowing my grief and sense of loss, took me aside to console me. He said, "Irv, I know this is a difficult decision for you. You're feeling the loss, the sadness, you're experiencing grief. But I believe this is God opening a door for you, a door of ministry that goes beyond this church. You will influence young men and women who go into ministry far beyond this community." Those were comforting words. Those were helpful words. I remember them well. Dr. Higgs is retired now, living in Houston, and I tracked him down just a couple of weeks ago and had a lovely phone conversation with him. I thanked him for those meaningful words at the time of my transition 43 years ago. There's a hint in that story about what we should pack for our journey. Now, the second story. 3 years later, after we moved to Portland, we took a 3-year leave of absence from the college so I could continue my education in Scotland. It was another wonderful opportunity, but preparing for that journey was extremely intense. Not only did it involve packing for the journey, as I mentioned, and emptying our home so it could be rented out, and finding a way, a place to store our 1930 Model A Ford. Well, from my frequent visits to a nearby automobile wrecking yard, I'd built a friendship with the owner, Charlie. So I asked Charlie's advice about finding a place for the Model A. He thought for a moment, and then he said, "You can have that." And he pointed to a small guard shack at the edge of his junkyard. And then he added, "But you'll have to move it." With some modifications, it would be the perfect size for my car, but how would I get it to my yard? Well, the college offered me the use of its flatbed truck, but I'd need a forklift. The only forklift I knew was Charlie's. So I went back to Charlie, and reluctantly he said I could use his forklift, but I'd have to find a way to get it to my house. Long pause. Now, if you had been in southeast Portland on that Friday afternoon, you may have seen me driving a forklift down 82nd Avenue at 5 o'clock during rush hour traffic. The next obstacle was maneuvering the flatbed with the guardhouse on it between our neighbor's home and ours into our backyard. To add to the thrill, the passage between the two houses was barely enough, and it was sloped toward my neighbor's home. My good friend, who you know well, Mike, the college basketball coach, had several out-of-state players visiting, and so he brought the crew down to help. But the problem persisted. The little house was precariously sitting on the truck, already leaning toward Dale's house. If we drove up the sloping passageway, the lean would intensify. Would my treasure fall into Dale's house and cause damage? Dale seemed to think so. He was worried. Everyone was worried. I thought we could make it, but I didn't feel free to say that, since if it fell, it would be falling on Dale's house, not mine. We stood there, contemplating, scratching our heads. It was tense. Would we succeed? Would we fail? Should we try or give up? Well, I had a lot at stake because time was running out before our trip, and this was my only shot at storing the car. I had an opinion, but didn't feel free to say it. Finally, after a long pause, one of the young men broke the silence. Surveying the passage between the houses, the truck, and the lean, he said, "I think we can do it." He said it confidently, and his opinion was contagious. His optimism was contagious. The guys positioned themselves to lend support. I got behind the wheel of the truck and slowly, gingerly backed between the houses into the backyard. We succeeded. Then we forklifted the little guardhouse into its resting place. But the miracle was not the moving. The miracle was how those very few hopeful words by one of the guys completely changed the mood of the group from doubt to confidence. It was a scene I will never forget. Well, there's a hint in that story about what we should take on the journey. And by the way, I saw that very same dynamic right here 2 weeks ago on our Reedwood workday. Several of us were working with this huge, heavy ladder, trying to position it above the choir loft to change the bulbs in that fixture. The ladder, aluminum, was heavy and awkward and heavy. At least 300 pounds. The lean, the angle, the weight made it precarious. We were trying to avoid damaging the fixture, the wall, the bulkhead, and preventing someone from getting hurt or killed. We waited, we debated, we thought, we calculated. And then Mark said, "We can do this." The tide changed. We did. Put that in your suitcase. One more story, a brief one. I was wrapping up my degree in Scotland, working very hard, finishing writing the thesis. I was on the last chapter. I felt the tension because there was a time deadline. I had to complete writing, submit it, have it bound and distributed to the examiners, who needed 6 weeks to read it and then sit the oral exam. But my writing was going slowly. It was tedious and I was tense. It had to be right, and that took time. I shared my concern, my fear, with a fellow who lived on the castle estate where we lived. He was an academic, hardworking, accomplished, 2 earned PhDs. He listened to my angst and then he said to me, "Irv, your thesis is not your magnum opus. Just write it. Get it finished." He concluded with the phrase, "Just bash it out." Well, that changed my attitude. I relaxed. He knew about these things. He'd been there. I worked efficiently, and a few days later, I spoke with my PhD supervisor about the need for all the pieces to come together, time for the externals to read, have the exam finished by late August, because my job was waiting for me. And he assured me if I kept to the schedule, he would keep to the schedule, and we'd make the timing. And his words were, just bung it in. Just bung it in, and we can make it. So I made a little card and put it on my desk. Bash it out and bung it in. And I did. And it worked. Those words changed everything. But the point, there's a hint in that story about what we should pack for the journey. Do you hear the common thread in each of those stories? Dr. Higgs, you'll influence young men and women who go into ministry. The basketball player and Mark, I think we can do this. My PhD writing in Scotland, bash it out and bung it in. Each of those stories is different, but there's a consistent theme. I think you've probably gotten the hint. The common theme is encouragement. Encouragement makes all the difference. My entire theme this morning is encouragement. Now think with me. Is this just an interesting topic? Encouragement? Something we like talking about? Or is this rooted in Scripture? Well, let's see. You remember what Darla just read. The words in the NIV, but encourage one another. From Peterson, the Message, let's see how inventive we can be encouraging. Take that when you pack. Now, back to the Hebrews text, and I'll have to be brief. That passage was in chapter 10, and a very interesting happens if you look at the whole book of Hebrews. Chapter 10 talks about encouraging one another. What follows is chapter 11, where the writer of Hebrews lists this beautiful litany of all those who have succeeded in the past. By faith, Abel. By faith, Enoch. By faith, Noah built an ark. By faith, Abraham. By faith, Sarah. He goes on and on and on with 14 more names. In fact, then after he recites this, he talks about the prophets. All of this is by faith. He finally concludes, sort of, and says, and what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, etc. So what he does in chapter 10, he says, encourage one another. In chapter 11, he gives this litany of people who succeeded in faith. Do you see what he's doing? He tells us to encourage one another, and then the writer of Hebrews encourages the reader by listing all of these things. Encouragement. It's not a standalone matter. It's rooted in Scripture. And then chapter 12 begins with the word, therefore. And if I paraphrase it, he's saying, therefore, in light of all this, encourage one another, all these successes, therefore, run the race. You can succeed. You can live by faith. It's a marvelous collection of thoughts all around the theme of encouragement. Encourage each other. Here's a list of people who did succeed. That should encourage you. Now you go ahead and succeed. Well, on Wednesday afternoon, I looked through the letters of Paul. There are 13 letters attributed to Paul. In 9 of them, Paul's nearly beginning or early words are something like, first of all, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for all of you. Or, I always thank my God as I remember you in my prayers. In 9 of the 13 books, Paul says that. Do you hear encouragement in that? I do. Let's apply it. Don, when I think of you, I thank God for your optimism and faith. Lori, When I think of you and pray for you, I thank God for your loving care. Ed, when I think of you, I thank God for your perseverance and courage. Courtney, when I think of you, I thank God for your perseverance and your humor. Marilyn, I thank God for. Shirley, I thank God for. Ray, Peggy, I thank God for your music. Lloyd, I thank. Do you see what happens when you hear those words? Do you feel encouraged? Absolutely. That's what Paul is doing in 9 of those 13 books. And I could go down every row here with each of your names and say what I thank God for, and you would find that encouraging. What about Jesus? That was even more fun. I just kind of scanned through the Gospels, particularly looking at Matthew and a little bit at Luke and a little bit at John, and I found that so many of his interactions with people were extremely encouraging. Now, I'd never looked at these interactions through the lens of encouragement before, but I invite you to read through the Gospels and look at the word encouragement. You're not going to see it there, but look through the lens of encouragement to Jesus' interaction with people. How about this? You are the salt of the earth, the light of the world. Now, is that an ought? Or is that a word of encouragement? Or the leper who said to Jesus, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. And Jesus said, I am willing. Be clean. Is that encouragement? The centurion with a paralyzed servant said, you don't even need to come. Just say the word and he will be healed. And Jesus said to those around, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. How do you think the centurion felt when he heard those words? Encouraged? I think so. And remember John the Baptist, he sent his disciples to ask Jesus, are you the one, or shall we look for another? Jesus said, well, go back and tell him about the gospel you're hearing and about the healings you're seeing. And then Jesus said, among those born of women, there is not risen among anyone greater than John the Baptist. Now, how do you think John felt when those words came trickling back to him? Encouraged? Well, like the writer of Hebrews says, and what more shall I say? There are so many more, but we don't have time. There is one more. Jesus on the cross, in agony, in pain, dying. And he says to the thief on the next cross, today you will be with me in paradise. For a convicted felon who is dying to hear those words, what incredible encouragement. Like Hebrews, and what more shall I say? What about the woman caught in the act of adultery? What about Peter, who Jesus says, you're a rock, and calls him that name? But Jesus not only demonstrated this kind of encouragement, he taught his followers how they could live in a relationship that brought consistent encouragement to him, to them. Jesus' words recorded in Matthew 11, take my yoke upon you. Now, I've heard that passage preached as get busy, pick up your shovel, get to work. It's not at all what it means. The image Jesus has in that comes from how they used oxen in those days. A weaker animal would be yoked to a stronger animal so that they could share the task, and the stronger animal would do the bulk of the work. So Jesus is not saying, work harder, pull your share, get busy. He's saying, come along with me. I'm stronger. And if you are yoked to me, we'll do this task together, and it will be easier for you to succeed. Imagine being on the back of a tandem bicycle with Lance Armstrong on the front. his feet attached to the pedals, saying, come on, let's attack that hill. You might even get some rest because I'm going to do most of the work. I wonder if Jesus in the 21st century, instead of talking about oxen and yoke, would talk about tandems and say, I'm on the front, get on the back. My legs are going to do a lot of work. You're going to be with me helping, and you may even get some rest. Now, in light of that, listen to Jesus' full words. Come unto me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Now, let that image flow into your mind and heart. As we go through the difficult places of life, we are connected side by side to Jesus. We don't have to do it alone. We are yoked to Christ, the great encourager who says, I will never leave you or forsake you. So the yoke is not a burden. It means being tied to the power of the universe. It means being tied to the encourager of creation. And it is Jesus' invitation to live our lives under the mantle of his encouragement. We need to put that into our suitcase for the journey. So here's what I've tried to say this morning. One of the most important things we can take is encouragement. It's essential. It's biblical. Encouragement we give to one another, but encouragement we experience from Christ, the great encourager. In a few moments, the choir is going to come. We'll do open worship after the choir comes. But I invite you to listen to the words of the choir because they speak of the dimensions of our journey, that God is with us, that God is leading us through deep waters, through the flood, in the fire, through great sorrow. God is leading us, God is with us, encouraging us. Then after the choir, we'll enter open worship. And I encourage you to just listen. Listen to the Spirit of God, the voice of Christ, as he brings you words of encouragement for your journey. Choir, if you will come.